The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Keep your mission on your mind, and your mind on your mission. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman.
Hey, you can hear him laughing back there. It's because he's fired up for his own show. It is Michael Coleman, Mission Minded. Keep your mind, your mission, your mind. You hear it every Monday through Friday. He's still chuckling back there. 10 o'clock every Monday through Friday here on the Tony Curry Radio app, TKR. Android just put Tony Curry Radio in there. Apple just put TKR in there. And you can listen to the show whenever you want. And, of course, we're very, very happy to be in cahoots with all the major indices when it comes to podcasts. Just search Tony Curry Radio Podcast. That's Curry with a K. And you can find Mission Minded. First of all, Michael, how are you doing, man? I know you just got back from the great state of Arkansas. Went and saw Bama beat that Arkansas butt this past week. I hope everything's well in your world.
Yeah, it was a good trip. And I want to tell you, the people in Arkansas were just first class. The fans, just really, it was a good experience, good stadium, good game day environment. Of course, Bama won, but it was made pleasant by just a class fan base. And so just want to shout out to them and the environment that they established for visitors to come in and have a good time.
Well, the fact that you didn't have your face painted and your shirt was still on, you were probably very endearing to them, so they probably didn't feel
like... I had people throwing money at me, but it's always to keep my clothes on, trust me.
I was going to say, maybe they knew you worked for a non-for-profit. They were trying to help you out, those Arkansas folks.
I don't think so. I think they were shielding their eyes.
All right, so you had some homework to do. I don't know. Hopefully you did it. You are, of course, the CEO, 35 counties in the great state of Alabama for the Montgomery Food Bank, formerly the Jimmy Hill Mission. And recently, President Biden had a conference on food insecurities and diet-related diseases. He wants to end hunger in the United States of America by 2030. By my math, that gives us about 7 years and a couple of months. Several things he's trying to push through is the child tax credit. He wants to continue that, expanding nutritional assistance programs and everything else. And so I threw to you a couple of days ago, I said, if you were President Michael Coleman, you were President of the United States of America, and let's make this easy because I don't want to get political here. Let's say that we don't have a Congress and a Senate to take votes on, okay? We're not worried. We're just saying, Michael Coleman, if you thought you, whatever you said, would happen, we're gonna start right there. First of all, is it possible to end hunger in any country?
Well, I mean, you want to talk about a huge challenge.
If there was enough food for all of us to eat and it was free, you still have to get people to the food and the food to the people. I know that through all your lines.
That's what I'm saying. It is such a complex system. Now, first of all, let me just say, I think the, and of course, as the food bank and part of Feeding America, we were a part of the White House, at least understanding that this was going to be taking place and he was going to be pushing for more focus on this. And of course, we always, you know, I'm very apolitical when it comes to taking care of our clients. And so I'm a strong advocate of anybody wanting to bring attention to the idea of food insecurity. And, you know, when I thought about when you said, hey, what would President Coleman do? I said, first of all, what a sad state of affairs if we ever got to that. But so after I came out of my spiral, my deep depression over that thought, I thought about, you know, the issue is there is no one thing and there is no magic formula for it. I thought about, well, let me just lay it out this way in terms of kind of explaining the complexities of it. So even if there was one solution that you propose that says I could solve hunger this way, you've got a country that's 50% is going to hate it. If it's a Republican idea or if you did it under the Republican banner, the Democrats are going to hate it. And if you did it on the Democrat banner, the Republicans are going to hate it. And so you've got, but again, let's take all those political issues aside.
Yes.
So you've got some real, you've still got some huge issues to have to overcome, even outside of providing the food, obtaining the food and getting the food in your feeding system and or your distribution system. And one of those is that we just face in our culture is there's this thing that I look at that talks about there's so much, there tends to be so much judgment, and that affects how people respond to crisis. So you can have a crisis that comes about through a hurricane, and just, you know, really praying for those who just experienced that in Florida and in the Carolinas and still continue to be battered in some places by it. So you say, well, that's described as an act of God kind of thing, and it's so everybody gets sympathy for that. But when you look at the enormity of the problem of food insecurity and hunger, there's so much to overcome just in terms about should I get involved in this, because isn't it the fault of those who, or at least a lot of those who don't have who are experiencing food insecurity? So there tends to be a lot of people who don't want to get involved in or don't want to support the issue because they think that the people who don't have enough to eat or who are poor because they don't have a good work ethic.
Yes.
Or, you know, they've made their choices, they're lazy, whatever it is that they've come up with. And lots of times it's human nature that we do those kind of things because if we feel like that it's that person's fault, then it removes any sort of internal compulsion to have to address that issue. And it's such a complicated issue. But if I can look at one or two people and say, oh, I know, you know, you're in this situation just because you're too lazy. And then what we do tend to do is we tend to paint everybody in a food insecure world as being there's the face of it, mm-hmm. this lazy person that I know. And then and so then any appeal to them is going to be shut off because it's all people's fault. I mean, it's their own fault. And I will tell you, so I said all that to prefaced my solution, at least how I would begin to bring about the solution is clearly it would be in an informational campaign. Number one, I would talk about the people who really suffer from food insecurities. And if you're not in this, or if you've not experienced this in your family, you would really be surprised. So many elderly are involved who only survive on government assistance or their Social Security. And my mother was one of those people. Now, my mother did not have to go stand in a food line because me and my sister prevented her from doing that. Mm-hmm. But there's so many people who the elderly call all the time and they just need assistance. And these are people who have worked their whole life.
Yep.
But due to a health condition or due to age or something else that's happened that wasn't planned in their life, you know, it just is what it is. My mother worked her entire life, and as she got older, she started experiencing health issues. She had scoliosis, which is curvature of the spine. And so when she got in her 60s, it bent her over, and she just couldn't hardly stand on her feet. But she worked until she just couldn't do it anymore.
Yeah, my dad went through the same situation, worked for 37 years as a newspaper distributor. And when he got into his 70s, he just wasn't eating well, and he ended up getting lung cancer. But we put him on Meals for Wheels, and it was a situation where we were happy to pay for it because we had the financial fortitude to do so. But it changed his life. I mean, to know that he was getting, you know, two or three squares a day, and yeah. and Meals for Wheels is a super cool organization because it's a way of checking up on people too. He was in his mid 70s, had cancer, and he looked forward to Jerry, who was his worker, who would come to the door, you know, almost every day, and knock on my dad's door, and they visit for a few minutes, and so he really appreciated it. But continue, I think this is really interesting.
Yeah. So, and then if you look at it from a child's perspective, and I've seen this so much in dealing with people. So a child, totally innocent, was not asked to be even brought up in the worst. And in the worst of situations, the worst of poverty, the worst of abusive situations. And again, it will just crush your heart to see some of the conditions that kids are brought up in on that nobody ever knows about. But one of those oftentimes is food insecurity. And so when you talk about childhood traumas, not knowing where if you're going to get to eat today is a huge trauma. And yes, you could look at the parents and you could look at those their conditions and you could look at their choice. You could make all sorts of judgments. But when you're looking at that child is not the real. I mean, that child didn't ask for this situation. He's born in the situation, and it affects everything, not only their growth, but proper nutrition also affects their mental development. Mm-hmm. And so it has a food has a lasting, both physically and emotionally in terms of whether it's there or not. So you have kids that come along and they may eat breakfast and they may eat lunch. So they're getting two good meals a day at least. And then all of a sudden you have like the pandemic and now they're all now they're all at home.
Yeah.
And so the food insecurity doesn't go away just because they're out of school or summertime comes around. So we have these summer feeding programs. But here's the reality, Tony. When you look at all this, what Feeding America has decided, and I believe it's true, is that there is enough food for everybody in our country. That's not the issue. There's several challenges, but the supply, even though the supply is down this year, there is enough food. Feeding America last year saved 4.7 billion pounds of food from going into a landfill.
Wow.
And this is good food, healthy food, and saved it and redistributed it out to people in need. And we still didn't obviously get everything that was available. So I really don't believe it's year after year a supply issue. I believe that so often people either don't have the political will or they don't have an understanding of what the issues are. It gets politicized so often, but it's so difficult to look at those kids and walk across party lines and work towards the good of the citizens and understanding how severe this problem is. So that's not just with politicians, but that's just with the average citizen. When I go to a college football game, we were talking about that this weekend. Now, the Alabama Stadium is 102,000. So we were with a gentleman who rented a motorhome. The motorhome was $700,000, but he rented it for one day for $600 to tailgate. And so it was a nice spread, but it was a lot of money for the tickets and all of that. And there was a lot of money to travel to the game. You look out over this area, there was just motorhome after motorhome after motorhome. Then you get into a stadium and you look at how much money it costs to get in the stadium, to travel, to tailgate, to tickets and all that. And you're looking on any given Saturday, people show up for a football game, 80 to 100,000. And it is just ungodly the amount of money that's spent on the weekends. And so when you look, that's all over the country.
Yep.
And it just goes to, it reminds me of how much wealth we have in this country. And I am pro-capitalist. I'm pro-business. I am all for people getting in there and making whatever they can make as long as they do it honestly and ethically and they don't hurt other people doing it. So I'm not trying to come across that way. What I'm trying to say is if we could agree on the enormity of the problem, that it's a serious problem, and we could just set aside for 5 minutes our disagreements and our judgments and just have empathy towards our fellow citizens, I think there's enough food and there's enough money to deal with this problem in our country. I can't speak to every country, but certainly in our country, that no child would have to go to bed hungry.
There's probably enough food in this country to not only take care of our own, but to also help other countries. Mission Minded here with Michael Coleman. He is, of course, the CEO of the Montgomery Food Bank. They cover 35 different counties, formerly the Jimmy Hill Mission. President Joe Biden recently had a conference on food insecurities and diet-related diseases, and of course he wants to end U.S. hunger in 7 years. I don't know. Again, there is enough food. It's getting the food in the right hands. A lot of times you talk about people in poorer counties where they have to drive 45 or 50 minutes to get to a grocery store or get to their local food bank, and it makes it difficult. Let me ask you this, though, and you brought something really interesting because a lot of people do look at lazy people or people that just want a free ride. You give them an inch, they take a mile. I recently saw that over $800 billion of the PPP and the COVID relief money got into the wrong hands. We've heard story after story after story, and obviously a lot of that money's been spent. It's gone, but people are going to jail. They're not going to get everyone. And whenever we have an opportunity that ever comes through the government, there are going to be scammers. It happens. Unfortunately, we live in a devious world that way. But I would think from a food standpoint, as long as we're not dealing directly in cash or money, and we're directly dealing in food, I wouldn't think there would be that many devious ways. If someone wants a free meal twice a day for a couple of years and they can pay for their own, but they're screwing the government out of it, it's that we're not talking $800 billion. You know what I'm saying?
And
you're having to talk about an individual that would be willing to swallow their pride and actually pretend they need the food. What I'm saying is, and I don't know what an average meal cost coming out of the Montgomery Food Bank. It's much probably like a school lunch where it's $1.50, $2, $2.50. It can't be that. Now, you would have to get free meals for 10 years to actually make a dent in anything the government could possibly do from a food insecurity standpoint. Am I wrong?
No, I mean, and you've touched on several things. That's another problem. Another issue is about government waste, and I'm certainly sensitive to that. And so, what ends up happening is, let's say, for many years, I outside of this, I was like, hey, you know, we just can't keep throwing money at the problem. And anytime you get bigger government, you also get more waste. And lots of times, I mean, PPP is a great example of that. But I've really kind of changed my thinking a little bit being on the inside and looking at it. I went to a USDA conference and they have there's 14 programs. We are involved in the food bank in a few of those. One, for instance, is a one for seniors. I'll just call it senior supplement. It has an acronym, but I won't get into it. But where the USDA sends this product down and it helps our farmers, but we also take this product and we box it up and we get it to seniors. And it's about a food supplement of about 35 pounds of food that they get each month who are able to sign up for the program. And the problem is that, yes, our government is huge. Yes, there's waste in our government. There's no doubt. But to go after, I'm all for going after eliminating waste, but you have to make sure that in order to try to reduce waste, that you're not punishing the people or hurting the people that the program is designed for. And this is just one of the effects that our country has gotten so nasty when it comes to politics, that Republicans don't want to give Democrats a win and Democrats don't want to give Republicans a win. And who gets caught up in this are the people that genuinely need these services for whatever reason. And so all that we can do is to make sure that, you know, we're stretching every donor dollar. And I will tell you this, too. This is how Feeding America calculates it. So for every 1.2 pounds of food, they calculate that as one meal.
Okay.
So we distributed 26 million pounds to our 35 counties last year. So that equates to... and I'm gonna mess up this math, but I'm doing it from memory, not because I'm calculating it in my head, but a little bit less than 22 million meals.
Mm-hmm.
But just to give you again the challenges or the complexities of it, most of our counties outside the city of Montgomery are very rural, and so I can if I just divided that up and said, okay, I'm going to get a certain amount of pounds to one county. The problem is that internal to that county, there's not a distribution. So we're constantly trying to create new partnerships or new agencies to come alongside of us that will help distribute that, because sometimes we can even get enough food for everybody in that county who needs the support to have the support, but then they're on the other side of the county. And with gas prices the way they are, even if you have transportation that works, you may not have the gas money.
Yeah.
It may take you $20 to drive to the other side of the county and back.
Yeah, Michael Coleman joins us here. Yeah, and I want to stop you there because you're filling my brain with so many questions, and we could go 4 hours on this because I think it's really interesting. Michael Coleman from Mission Monty. You can hear the show every Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. Central Time. If you're listening outside the Birmingham area, we have thousands of folks that do that, 10 o'clock Central Time, Monday through Friday. And, of course, if you can't find us at 10, find us on Tony Curry Radio Podcast, info@TonyCurryRadio.net, info@TonyCurryRadio.net with your emails. We'll get to those next week. Let's just assume that money's not a problem, because right now it does seem like this country is throwing a lot of money at a lot of issues.
Sure.
And with that comes a ton of waste. And so, you know, it's one of those situations where, gosh, I wish the honor system worked in this country. It's unfortunate it doesn't. But if you give away $1,000, chances are more than half of that's going to go in the wrong hands. If let's just dumb this down, okay? Because I realize there's a lot of different moving, and I realize it wasn't very fair of me to throw this into a 30-minute program, because you could probably sit in front of President Biden from here until next March and probably not get through it all. So if we had the financial capability of just building more food distribution centers, like individual food banks based on the size of a county, and then, you know, obviously we don't want people having to travel 50 miles to get their food.
Sure.
And then somehow I have some type of distribution line. Now we're talking, I don't know how many counties there are in the United States of America, but obviously it would be a need by need process. Some counties need it a lot more than others. And maybe you could even envelop grocery stores in some of those areas as the food distribution center, because they've got the refrigeration. They've already got a lot of the produce, depending on how much of the stuff they're giving back. Would that be something that you would entertain as President Michael Coleman?
I think having mixing a business in a nonprofit space is incredibly difficult, but you do hit on something so key, and that we both put money towards and training towards, and that is capacity building.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll give you just some of the challenges. So again, just for the audience just to orient them to the situation. So we have 35 counties. We have smaller food banks in our network that serve 23 of those counties. So we're 12 counties come directly to us. And I've noticed sometimes somebody will pull up and a couple or whatever will fill there, will have ordered, let's say 2,000 pounds of food, 3,000 pounds of food, as much as they can fit in the back of their pickup truck, or it may be a trailer that they're pulling. Mm-hmm. And so the question was, if you could get, if transportation or the capacity, would you order more food if capacity of your transportation was not an issue?
Yes.
And so we sent that out, and 57% of our agencies responded back, yes, I would order more food, because what they do is they don't pay for food. They pay for a shared handling fee. So we distribute the food. It's really semantics. Technically, they're not buying for the food, but they're helping us cover the cost of storing it and freezing it and delivering it and all that. So it's 18 cents a pound. So if 1.2 pounds equals a meal, basically you can get five meals for a dollar. And as it's calculated. And so what we're trying to do is think of ways that, okay, here's volunteers who are saying, look, I live in this part of the county, and either through my church or my group or my agency, we will be part of the distribution process. But here's the thing. Maybe I don't have a freezer. So if I don't have a freezer, I can only bring dry goods in and distribute dry goods. So from my perspective, I'm like, okay, so what would it take for a commercial size freezer? Would be probably close to $20,000. And so, you know, do we invest in that to build capacity? So now that the people can get fresh meat or at least frozen, you know, chicken and protein and things like that. Is that a good spend? And how many of those can you purchase? You know, how much money is there out there? And some of these are in really poor rural communities. And, you know, like you can come fill up their pantry, but their pantry is like 200 square feet. I mean, it's just a small little tiny couple of rooms. And so capacity builders, we're one of the things we're always looking at is not only getting more agencies, but how do we kind of squeeze more juice out of the connection that we have? And sometimes it is, hey, you know, well, let's help you get another location. Let's help you do this process better. And so that we can move more food, because sometimes we start getting backed up and we're like, hey, we got to get this food out to the people. But lots of times there's just not, sometimes it's not the transportation or the mechanism to get to physically get it there, or to get it there, store it properly and safely to then turn around and give it to the customer. So food is a huge deal, getting it to us, but that's only the beginning. The complexities just continue to compound.
I can certainly see that. And by the way, there are currently 12,833 churches in the state of Alabama. That would be a novel idea, that perhaps we could have churches actually dole out. And some churches,
that's actually most of our, because there is a requirement, a federal requirement, that either you have to be a 501c3 that's already serving people to be a food distribution agency. And so you might be a crisis pregnancy center.
Yep.
And you're like, well, we help people with crisis pregnancies. We don't necessarily distribute food. But if they wanted to, they could, for instance, set up a pantry to everybody who's in crisis planning, and they could give food out to those people who qualify. So they would be eligible. But then you have 501c3 equivalents like churches. So the vast majority of our agencies that serve food are actually churches, because it's easy for them to come get food and then distribute it to their community.
Well, and to go along with your point as well, you talk about the refrigeration aspect of this. And of course, you say $20,000. $20,000 doesn't sound like anything anymore. We used to have to say billion with a B. We don't say B anymore. It's now trillion.
Yeah.
And it's just crazy. I don't know where it's coming from. But when you're talking about the refrigeration aspect, maybe that's something that you could use food stamps for. And this is something that I would love to get into in an entire show, because I have a friend of mine who I've known for 35 years who recently got on food stamps. He's my age. And I try to help him out where I can, but he needs to find his own way. He needs to feel his way through what he's working on right now. And I'm always there for him spiritually and emotionally. But he mentioned the fact that he's on food stamps. Do food stamps work? I don't know how we should do a whole show. Maybe we can do that next week on what food stamps are, how they work, how you get them. But do food stamps, does that work?
Actually it does. But let me tell you, it's the same with every program. So let me give you the good and let me give you the bad.
Mm-hmm.
Food stamps are actually a bridge for many, many people. Now there's the shame of signing up for it, because again, especially in Alabama, lots of times there's this, it's like standing in a food line for the first time. There's guilt, there's shame. You don't want to be dependent on anybody. And then the people around you offer enough judgment that makes it difficult. We actually have a SNAP, and SNAP is the acronym for supplemental. I'm so terrible with that acronym.
It's okay.
But
SNAP.
But anyway, SNAP is the food stamps. And we actually have somebody that goes around to our mobile pantries and goes around to these. And that's actually supported by the state of Alabama to be able to help people if they qualify for that, is to help make it easy for them to sign up. Now, the bad thing is, and you kind of touched on it easy, is it better if you just get food? It's hard to, come up with a scheme with just food. Let me tell you something. There are people who are so brilliant out there on the streets, and they can monetize anything. So let me just tell you a very common way to monetize. The government said, we're going to get out of these stamps, so we're going to go to a EBT card.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have an EBT card. And let's say, for instance, that I get every month, let's just say $300 of food stamps for my family. When I go to the grocery store, I can swipe that and, you know, up to $300 for items that qualify for it. Or I can take $200 cash from somebody and give them my card, and then they can go get $300 worth of groceries.
Yeah.
So you've monetized it just that easily. And then they you know, so they bought $300 worth of groceries for two. But what I've tried to do is, rather than say, oh, there's people out there that abuse the system, so let's do away with the system, to do that, I've recognized is just not who I want to be. Because yes, there are abuses in the system. Yes, you can work to try to avoid abuses in the system, but to reduce it or hurt it hurts people. It hurts the elderly. It hurts children. It hurts our neighbors who are in need, that may be where they are not because of something that they did wrong or a poor choice. Sometimes life just happens. And it's just like that question I was asked a long time ago, Michael, if you had nine guilty people, would you send, let me back up on that.
Mm-hmm.
You have 10 people. Would you send them all to jail? Not knowing, but you were going to send one of those as innocent. So nine are guilty, one is innocent. But would you send them all to jail and punish the innocent one? Or would you set them all free because you set nine criminals free because you don't want to punish the innocent person? And I wrestled that. And where I came down on that was, I don't want to punish the innocent person. And if that meant in this scenario that nine guilty people went free, I would rather nine guilty people go free.
Mm-hmm.
And take an innocent person and enslave them in a jail the rest of their life.
Hey, Michael, I got a story for you.
What's that?
Genesis 18:24, man. I mean, the whole story is, what if there are 50 righteous ones and 1,000 filthy ones? Do you save the city? And you know, the question continually gets asked, and you get to the point where you save the city for the one, right? I mean, you do. You have
that's,
to do
that's
what's
exactly right.
Right.
That's how I look at governmental programs. Yes, they're imperfect. Yes, there's problems. But I see the ones all the time that $150 or that $210, it bridges the gap for them to be able to put food, not only for themselves, but their children. And look, I know it's easy to not have a lot of sympathy for a 35-year-old man or even, you know, a middle-aged woman. But when I start saying these are, you get into the elderly and you get into the children, to where life is just starting for them or life is getting closer to the end, I just think we have a societal responsibility to care for those people.
Yes, sir.
And if we could just take the time to quit critiquing in a negative way, I'm not saying look for better solutions, but to wash your hands of the whole thing because there's somebody out there taking advantage of the system. Let me tell you something. There's lots of people gaming the system, and a lot of even wealthy people who are gaming the system, as you've seen recently with Brett Favre,
mm-hmm.
Taking advantage of the welfare program.
Yep.
Now, if there were a lot of people, that person mm-hmm. would already be on trial or already be in jail.
Yep.
Now, I don't know what's going to happen to him, but that's a prime example of where he gained the system. And then you have all sorts of gaming going on. It's not just with those who are poor.
Coming from a guy that could probably have bought that gym or that facility on his own money too. And
absolutely. Yeah. Or he could have with endorsement deals or something.
Easy.
No doubt.
Michael, fantastic show. We went a little long today, but I just love this. I'm going to pick this back up again because I think there's a lot of different ways we can go here. And, you know, who knows? Maybe President Joe hears this show, which he can, anywhere he gets his podcast, and he's got some ideas. I think you would be awesome to be on a board. I don't know if they even ask for boards of directors on stuff like this, and you're probably asked to help give some details on some of your thoughts and examples on how we can do this. But I just think it was amazing. But let's continue it next week. You want to?
All right, buddy. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, we'll do some emails, too. info@TonyCurryRadio.net. info@TonyCurryRadio.net. And again, wherever you get your podcasts, pull up a Tony Curry Radio podcast. It's K-U-R-R-E. Or better yet, listen to TKR, Tony Curry Radio. Get the TKR app. But like tens of thousands of folks have already done, the show runs every single week. We run it right here on Tony Curry Radio. We love having it on Mission Minded at 10 o'clock Central every single morning. Michael, thank you so much, brother. God bless you, man.
Thank you. You as well.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.